Hey, it's Stephanie here. This episode comes with a content warning. This is simply to empower you, our audience, with the knowledge you need to make healthy decisions about how and if you should consume this podcast content. In this episode, we discuss IVS, miscarriage, mental illness, and difficult birth stories. I'm not a doctor or a therapist, nor are the guests on the show. The stories, ideas, and thoughts expressed are those of the guests alone. A list of resources are available in the podcast description, where I have tried to list as many hotlines, info pages, and supports I could find. Please take care of yourself, and if you need to, don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help. Someone will reach back.
I'm so glad you're here.
Hello and welcome to Town Rituals Red Tent Gathering. In this episode, I've invited guests to share their stories to pregnancy, raising children, or not. Some of the guests in this episode will join me again in episode 2 as they move through the transformation of choice to reality. My journey to pregnancy was pretty typical. A child was wanted and was created by choice and in love. A little less than a decade ago, my child's father and I decided to throw caution to the wind and we stopped using contraception. I personally thought it would take us a few months, at least 6, before we got pregnant. Truth is, I was pregnant within a couple of months, my body beginning the transformation and parenthood closer every day. My pregnancy was fairly normal and pretty good, all things considered, until the end, when baby was 15 days late and I had very bad edema, retaining a substantial amount of water weight, which thankfully shed within a week or two of the birth. Their birth, however, was ultimately an emergency C-section, my dilation never getting beyond 5 centimeters. Once they were out, we discovered the cord wrapped twice around their neck, my placenta badly depleted. The experience in many ways was traumatic and stressful for quite a few of us. I still feel echoes of the C-section in my body when I think about it. I'm fortunate to live in a country with public health care. I'm so grateful for my midwife, the OB who did the surgery, even though he was a bit of an asshole, the nursing staff, and my favorite, the anesthesiologist. And let's not forget my son's father, who was so supportive. There are so many things, so much advice out there in the world on how to parent. My own reflection is that nothing really prepares you for what is about to occur in your life when you decide to become a parent. We left the hospital and I walked into my home holding my newborn, and I stood in the front hallway crying. I didn't know what to do. Where do I put it? What do I do with myself? Is it breathing? Does it need to be fed? Changed? We all eventually settled into a routine and life developed its own flow with some difficulty. My milk required a lot of encouragement to come in, pumping quite a bit. My chest so swollen at the start, it made it difficult for the baby to latch. I also navigated the healthcare system to access mental health support while trying to survive postpartum depression, which I've discussed in season 1 in a previous episode. Truth is, children arrive in our lives in all sorts of ways and are raised by all manner and many people. These are a few of their stories. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being here today. So joining me now is my friend Jennifer, who has 2 lovely children. And we're going to talk a little bit about their journey to making the decision to become pregnant and have children. And a little later, we'll also talk about their experience as a mother. So welcome. Thanks for joining me.
It's good to be here.
So this is actually a first. This is the first time I've recorded a session in person.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
It's actually kind of nice. I feel a little bit nervous because usually it's just a bunch of people. So why don't we start with maybe talking a little bit about the decision by you and your partner to have children?
Yeah.
Or was it a decision?
It was a decision. And I know I always was feeling a little unprepared for children for a long time. And so we sort of kept putting it off. And then it's like, oh, we're getting kind of old. So we decided that, nope, we're going to do this. And then we started trying. So didn't seem to be happening very much, very well. But, you know, we were trying, but just no results. And and then, unfortunately, I ended up having a health issue where I lost an ovary, which was unfortunate. But within a few months of losing the ovary, surprise, we were ended up being pregnant. So, yeah, clearly the health issue was getting in the way, and it was a we weren't not trying, but we weren't trying specifically either. So it was a very good surprise. So
sounds like a baby who really wanted to be yours.
I think so. So yeah, and that baby journey was a little fraught because he ended up being diagnosed with a heart condition while in the womb, and so there were to be surgery and things like that. But and then he showed up 7 weeks early just to make life more interesting.
Surprise
I'm here. And so that journey was kind of scary. We were 2 months in the hospital and surgery, and there was a stroke and all sorts of stuff. But and that led to him having cerebral palsy. So we were on that journey, and there were some other things with surgeries and stuff along the way. But it did make me hesitant with our second child. We thought having a sibling was a good idea, but I think I was a little hesitant while he was still very young to add another baby. Then also maybe a little afraid it might happen again. Statistically, it was unlikely, but you've still got that fear as a parent that, you know, what if something else goes wrong?
Yeah.
And yeah, so that was a bit. So we waited about almost 5 years to do the second one. And so, but I mean, we did feel fairly strongly that our first child should have a sibling. It's a good idea, we think, for not everybody, but for, we were thinking that, you know, especially you'd have a bit of a friend, because sometimes kids with disabilities end up with less friends and things like that. So just, you know, a family unit, and two was a good idea. Yeah. So
do you and your sibling and your partner and their siblings have good relationships?
My sibling and I have a great relationship. We love each other to bits. You know, we acted like siblings when we were children, but we are super close. And I think my partner, he has some good relationships with his brothers on and off. We don't see them as much as one would like, but they're, you know, decent relationships. They apparently fought like cats and dogs when they were kids, but, you know, I think as adults, they're a little closer.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's, you know, and just, you know, there's other people out in the world with you, and hopefully that, you know, they develop relationships like the one that my sister and I have, because we're close, and we would do just about anything for each other. So
yeah, that's really nice. And I would say I have a similar relationship with my sibling, that they show up for me all the time and support me all the time. And sometimes I feel like I actually can't reciprocate enough or show enough gratitude for how much they do for me. But I know I was talking to someone else who decided to only have one kid, and when we talked about like why they didn't want to have two, and I remember them saying, well, you know, the relationship that I have with my older sibling is not the same that you have with yours. Like, you guys have a great relationship. You really get along. But that it's not the same for me and that person. Like, we didn't like each other growing up, and it's an effort to have a relationship with them. And so they were really firm against having a second kid, which was, for me, one of the first times I'd ever heard that. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess, right? Like, just because you have two kids doesn't mean they're going to like each other. I mean, hope they do.
Yeah.
But, I mean, your kids are, they're doing pretty good.
Yeah, they have their moments. There's some jealousy at times. Because,
yeah.
I mean, I think possibly, I don't know, but I think 5 years may have been a bit long to wait, just because the older one gets used to being the center of the universe.
Yes.
And, you know, there can be some adjustment. They love each other. They just sometimes vie for the spotlight. And that can be, I think, in any sibling relationship, but sometimes it's a bit hard and they get mad at each other and there's hurt feelings. So,
That's true.
but you know, for the most, they do love each other, so, which is good. Just have to work on their some of their day-to-day interactions.
I feel like that's a normal sibling thing. I know, so we have a mutual friend and they also have a boy, and they were playing together in the park, and another mom, because she and I are so close. Anyway, this other mom said, "Oh, like those two boys, like they play like they're siblings, right? They have that like, I like you, I don't like you, get away from me moments, and then they're right back together, which is nice. It's taken them a bit to get there. But do you feel open to talking a little bit about your journey with your to get pregnant with your second child?"
Sure. So I was a bit older then, as we all do. We had been trying for a little while, and one of our medical professionals had suggested that because of our age and the fact that I only had one ovary, that perhaps some consultation with a fertility specialist would be a good idea. So we did do some, and we went through a few rounds of doing all the fun artificial insemination stuff, and but it wasn't really working, and we were spending a lot of money because it's not cheap. And we ended up giving up and saying, "Nah, it happens, forget it," because we were just, it's a bit of an emotional roller coaster to go through all of
Yeah,
that, especially.
absolutely.
And surprisingly enough, the very next month after we quit, we got pregnant. It was like, oh, well, did just all the stress of it go away or something? And so it was what it was. And you know, lucky for me, I felt like it was a very uneventful pregnancy, which was good.
That's good.
And so yeah, and then so my children are siblings, and they because I think it would have been really hard. I think I would have been super crushed if we didn't end up having this similar issues again. So
How did you get past that? Like, how did you get past that fear? Did you just like, we'll conquer this? We've done it once. Like,
You know, I do have that kind of keep calm and carry on attitude sort of thing, I guess. We once had a medical professional tell us that we're the calmest parents they'd ever met.
you and your partner really just rolled with
We did.
how it happened.
And, you know, it was tough, and, you know, probably someday I'll pay for just rolling with it. And, but, yeah, I mean, because it's no use to fall apart, because you got to be there for your kid. So it's, you know, I've, in all of the hospital stuff with my first children, I saw some parents just, you know, screaming and crying, just falling apart, like they didn't know what to do. And I like, well, if I'm no good to my kid if I'm just falling apart.
That's true. That's true.
It's you know, you do it, you know, it was kind of that. And I know a lot of parents in the disability community, it's kind of, you just do what you got to do, but at the same time you should probably look after yourself a little more. But you know,
Well, I think,
that's
I
part of
mean,
how they
I
work.
love you, but you have awful self-care.
I do.
Which, well, we'll talk about in a little bit, I
Yeah.
guess, because that's an interesting introduction to being a mother.
Yes.
That's funny, actually.
Yeah.
We all have those friends who know that they will buy a home, that they'll travel, that they'll have exciting careers, maybe they'll make babies, or they know it. I wasn't those people. Which brings me to my guest, Julie. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here too.
Were you one of those people?
I was most definitely one of those people. I wanted to have 10 kids. As a child, I believed that I would grow up to have 10 kids because my grandmother had 10 children. And obviously, things changed a little bit. But I do like completely and totally remember wanting 10 kids and actually like befriending a boy in my class who also wanted 10 kids already at that age,
You were
thinking,
serious
oh, I was dead
about
serious about it. Yeah, absolutely. I was the kid on the bus, like, I used to ride the school bus, and instead of sitting in the back with my friends, I would sit in the front with the school bus driver's baby, and I would just babysit her baby for the whole ride to school because I was cool like that. But yeah, I've always been a huge fan of children, and I really did want to have one.
You wanted to have a lot of them?
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask.
Did I have a lot of them?
Yeah. I'll imply it. You can ask it.
I did not have a lot of them. I mean, yes and no. Really, I have had zero children, but I have had way more than 10 in my life, which I'm very grateful for. And I work as a professional nanny, so I work with other people's children, and I possess none of them, and it's a very rewarding experience. Maybe a lot more rewarding even than it would have to have 10 children of my own, and all the responsibility to back that up. But yeah.
Do you feel okay to talk about your journey to where we are today, where you went from wanting children to not having any?
Yeah, sure. So I got married, you know, right out of the gates, coming out of university. I think in part I lost a friend young, and that sort of like jettisoned my life into fast forward. But I definitely wanted to have children sooner rather than later. My mother had children young, and so I grew up believing that was sort of the way to do things. You get married, you have children, and, you know, happily ever after, white picket fences, cars, houses, all the rest. And instead, I had a husband who had some mental illness stuff. We briefly tried before that came into play. And then the reality and the logistics of family life with all of that behind it became a real consideration for me, which is interesting because I think, you know, we have these fantasies of what it will be like to have babies, but that's very different from actually starting a family. And yet, I would have rushed right into the having babies thing. That's how keen I was on having children. But then that happened. We split, so we did not have children. And I then married again. And after that, I had a succession of miscarriages, which led me to my doctor saying that it was unlikely that I would be able to have children. I tried later in life, so a few years back, with another partner, but did have another series of miscarriages, so I kind of just abandoned ship, mostly because they said it was very unlikely that, like, they'd sort of put it down as you would have to make a decision between your life and the child's life. Based on my breathing stuff, I have pretty severe chronic asthma, and the medicine wasn't working, so it was... Yeah, it was iffy. So I decided in the end not to have children. And that's where I'm at today. So, yeah. Turning 42 tomorrow and no children. Oh, my God.
Well, I'm sorry that you did have all those miscarriages.
Oh, that's okay. I mean, they were very traumatic experiences. I think we don't really talk enough about what that experience is like for women. Or even the pain of not being able to have them. There's sort of like a stigma about not talking about that because it makes everyone uncomfortable to bring it up. Definitely makes the people with children uncomfortable if you talk about your inability to have children. And I guess I was less prepared for that even than the not having kids itself. So yeah.
What do you think would make it less stigmatized to have these conversations?
Definitely. So what I experienced, and I think what a lot of women experience, I think actually it might even be a drive for some women having children, was that I was shocked at how many people had children and then completely dropped out of my life. And I think at the time, like, I was very young, so I was still busy and going out. And I think we don't take those things into consideration in the beginning years. It's just you start losing friends and you don't really understand why your friends who have had children aren't calling, especially when you're someone who loves children, right? But now, I mean, obviously I have a different attitude about that now, having worked with so many mothers, overworked and exhausted, you know, overstretched mothers. But I think that was this painful thing. So you're losing friends while you're also feeling like that bar for validation of your womanhood is getting further and further by not having the children. So it was sort of like this arc into a void where you don't really know. It's just getting lonely and lonelier.
Yeah.
And so I think that women being able to be open with each other about the difficulties of motherhood, also like being able to talk about that and to deplete a bit of this perfectionist attitude that I think actually, like, it makes women feel like they're stuck in prison. I see this in, at least in a lot of the mothers I've worked with, where unless they can be perfect, they just want to dissociate from everyone around them because it's so much extra stress to have to prove yourself to your friends or prove yourself, your position as a mother, or even compare yourself as a mother to other mothers. Mm-hmm. That I talk with a lot of my mother friends and they're all exhausted from that too. So while I get it, I think there really isn't enough attention spent on just the journey of women and the choice to be childless. Because I have a lot of friends also now who I might not have been friends with, maybe, right? Who have chosen to be childless. Like, they genuinely never wanted children. They still don't, and their careers are very important to them. And I have wound up being friends primarily with women like this, not for choice, but just for situation and circumstance.
I remember 15 years ago, a really good friend of mine got pregnant, and a few months after her first child was born, we ended up getting into, we're still friends, one of the biggest and worst fights we've ever had. We're not friends about fight. What? Well, she was very upset because she felt that I didn't come and spend time with her now that she had a child. Now, we lived in cities 6 hours apart. I didn't have a car. And I was very angry because every time I went to visit her, it meant giving up time with one of my parents, which was really important to me at that time. And the fight isn't what's important. What she said, I think, prepared for me for how my life would change as becoming a mother. She said to me, you know, she's like, my life changed, but nobody else's did, right? And that she had made this decision to have children and her life had changed and she had been unprepared for that change. She felt that her single friends, her friends without children, like, abandoned her. So I wonder if women on both sides of that feel like, I feel like when I became a parent, when I became a mom, I took that lesson from her with me, prepared that some of my relationships would significantly change and that there were people who would stop being in my life. Not because they didn't like me, because they didn't love me, because they didn't want to be with me, but our lives had fundamentally shifted in a way. And it's nice what I'm seeing later. Some of those relationships have come back together.
Great.
But I feel like, I feel like what I'm hearing is that women experience that on both sides.
I think they do. And, you know, we talk about the judgment between, I was talking about this with a friend last week, that, like, singles refer to their couple friends as breeders, as though this is really a thing. We don't do that. Like, that was a Bridget Jones thing. And yes, it's funny. And yes, I think there are some of those judgments maybe happening on a private level, but I don't think that it's this overarching theme that's going on under the surface. I think there is genuinely a competition that is pushed onto women that is the driving force of all the conflict between us. And I think that what could really change the world actually is just women supporting women in general and all the phases of that journey along the way. So, for example, my job is literally supporting mothers. What I want to tell friends specifically, because I don't have a lot of extremely wealthy friends, but, like, I work for some of the wealthiest families and they hire someone else. They have another whole human being behind the scenes making everything perfect. Their lives only look perfect because somebody else is doing more than 50% of that work. And I think what's interesting is that I think a lot of women shy away from wanting to talk about their problems because they're afraid of, you know, not falling in line in that competition somehow or being lesser than. And what I want to tell them all is just, like, you're all doing a fantastic job at what you're doing. What you're not seeing is what is actually going on behind the scenes. So you're aspiring for something already that is impossible. Like, it doesn't exist. Nobody is a perfect mother. They don't exist.
Yeah.
No matter how many resources you have, no matter how much support you have, there are going to be parts of that journey that are just complicated and difficult and emotional, and, you know, it's a journey, but we can all be on it together. It doesn't have to be, you know, people who make babies and separately people who don't.
I think that we all understand what that journey is, and I think that women, as women, we have an empathetic duty to show up for each other, at least to hold space for what that experience is. And it would be good to be able to have, you know, honest conversations. But for me, the primary thing that needs to happen is mothers need to be honest about how imperfect that experience is, that it's not this, like, you know, my perfect baby bundle taking me to heaven and I'm just in heaven every night. It's not like that. It's just not. And pretending it is isn't helping.
And it's not helping anyone. No. Social media makes it worse.
Oh my gosh, so much worse. So low. Don't even get me started on social media, because I could talk about that for 3 days.
Well, that the loss of you know, intergenerational families. So this has come up in season one of the podcast.
Yeah.
We had, you know, we had different perspectives on one of the episodes, but one of the guests was talking about that intergenerational and those relationships that she has with, like, cousins and aunts, right? And they, you have this, like, other family that you spend time together, and there's this support that you have. But I think for people who have difficult family relations,
oh,
right, you've lost your village, so you don't have that intergenerational guidance. And two, maybe because in some cases, like, people are having children older, so the people that would have been around to help don't have the energy, and
you know,
there's a lot of things, right? And I think that women, you're right, I think we do need to be more honest about it. And I think people with children need to be more willing to be vulnerable to say, I need help.
Absolutely. That would change it all, actually. And if only so they could see how many people like myself are right there saying, oh, please let me help you. I would love to. Like, I, as somebody who loves spending time with children and wants that but can't have it, there are a lot of people out there with a lot of love to give and a lot of support to give that are just waiting for someone to ask. But it's never appropriate to encroach yourself onto someone else's family either. There are boundaries around those things that are pretty, you know, white picket fence solid. But, you know, another thing that is a topic that is under-discussed is the role of fathers in the family, and that I think that's another side of the competition coin that comes up a lot. And I find it so fascinating when I start with a new family every time, because every time there's this presentation of the perfect family, like, they all try to sell themselves to me, because I usually get to take my pick of which families I work for. But usually I would say around the 1 week mark, we start getting into the mothers start complaining about their partners not being up to snuff support-wise, and that they wish their partners were doing more. And I want women to know that that is 100% across the board so far in what I've seen. And I think that's something that we also need to take into consideration as we enter into this journey, and not make ideas in our heads about what it will be like, that there is this perfect ending. Because I do see some people having children as though that's going to create the perfect family, that their partner is going to show up for them. And I would say definitely think twice before rushing into it in that way. And also look for support in all ways. It doesn't just have to be that male partner. And, you know, they're skilled in so many ways and so many things. And later in life, I find that can come in handy in parenting in ways that mothers might not be interested anymore in, you know, roles that come later, like driving kids around and stuff. The dads show up for those things often. But I think that mothers really do need some emotional support. So I think making sure you have that before you go into the journey, and not just your male partner, but somebody who's going to be able to relate to what you're going through and the exhaustion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
That was nice.
I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks. I'm glad you're here too.
Hello and welcome back. I am joined with my good friend Rebecca. We've actually tried to record this a few times and we've had a few tech bit delays, so hopefully we get through it this morning. Rebecca, I'm so glad you're here.
I'm so glad you're here.
So I've known you for quite a while. We actually, our children are about 7-8 months apart.
Yeah.
And I know for me that when we were both pregnant, like, I mean, before we were pregnant, I knew who you were, but I feel like our friendship really blossomed when we were both pregnant at the same time. Yeah. And you were such an informed pregnant person and an informed mother that I came to trust your suggestions and recommendations. Like, I remember there were so many times that I was just, I don't know what I'm doing, what the hell is going on? And I would just message you and be like, oh, this and this and this. And like, here's a resource. And it was absolutely fantastic. So first and foremost, thank you for being the best mom friend I could have had through that. I mean, I mean, I remember even, I think after my child was born, you came over to meet them. And you brought your child, and yeah. I was making us food. And then I remember I walk into the room and you just like wet nursed my kid because yeah. he was hungry. And it was so nice that our friendship was just already yeah. there, that you were like, yeah, she won't have a problem with it.
He was upset. You were busy making coffee for someone else.
Yeah. And you know what? It probably helped because we really did struggle to get on the breast. So, yeah. Anyway, so well, to starting there, why don't you, tell us a little bit about your journey to deciding to get pregnant and raise a child.
Yeah. So he is, I guess, 8 and a half, a little over 8 and a half now. And so I had gotten married, and a bunch of years, I would say 9 or 10 years after we got married, sort of became sort of the right time. I mean, everyone's like, there's no perfect time, but obviously you need to have like a place to live and have a decent job and, you know, have some sort of stability if that's a choice that you're making. Things happen, but, so we had made that choice and we had started trying, and I can't remember how long, but it was definitely like, okay, ooh, I'm ovulating. Let's make sure we're making a baby. And I don't remember how long we tried for, but it obviously wasn't very long because it wasn't, you know, like I don't, you know, didn't have that sort of traumatic, like, oh my gosh, it's been taking so long. And then, so I got pregnant and everything, you know, we were able to get a midwife pretty much right away because, my kid's dad is Métis, and so there we went to 7th generation midwife services in Toronto. And so, yeah, we started going to appointments, and then unfortunately, I ended up having a miscarriage, and it was called a molar pregnancy, so it was never viable. And so that sort of, I guess, how far along was I? Maybe 12 or 13 weeks. We had had a midwife appointment where she couldn't hear the heartbeat, and she was like, don't worry about it. It's still super, super early. Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't, doesn't matter. And then I unfortunately started bleeding and ended up having to get a D&C because just the way the molar pregnancy happens, they really need to make sure everything has been evacuated. And so that was fine. It was, you know, just a procedure, but then we had to wait 6 months before we could even start trying again. So that was sort of the hard part where, you know, we had that, oh my gosh, I'm so excited, we're pregnant. And then like, and then of course, like it was like days after I announced it on Facebook. So that was hard. And then what was really nice was we did a little ceremony, and we went for a little walk in the woods and found a tree that we both liked, and we put down some tobacco and did a little smudge.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, so that was really nice. And actually still, we took a few pictures, and I still have one of those photographs of a selfie of us that I kind of manipulated. Anyway, so that was really nice. We had sort of given what we thought was our baby a nickname. And so we just put that out there and sort of named the baby and sort of allowed the smoke to bring that spirit back up to the creator. And then we had to wait 6 months, and then we just started trying again right away. I think partly because it would never have been a viable pregnancy, that wasn't as much, it didn't feel quite as hard as I've heard other people talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why we were able to sort of, you know, go right back in and start trying again. And again, it didn't, I don't remember how long it took, but again, it wasn't particularly long. And what was interesting was, you know, we had sex and then I went, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. And it was such a weird, like, I was like, psh, whatever, you're such a weirdo. Like, how could you know, like, you literally just had sex. And it turns out I actually was.
And that's amazing that you're just like, it's here, it's time. We've been chosen. We've been chosen.
It was really interesting. And what was funny about the whole trying part was, in the meantime, my sister had got engaged, and we actually stopped trying for 2 or 3 months because I was like, I don't want to be pregnant, like, roll me down the aisle in my sister's wedding, or like have a brand new newborn. Or so we actually paused for a few months too, just so, you know, in consideration of my sister, and, you know, and myself, because I knew I was like, I'd have to stand for the ceremony and, you know, all this stuff. So I was pregnant at her wedding, but I was only 6 or 6 and maybe 6 months 7 months pregnant, enough to sort of show and for our family to be excited about it and hopefully not take too much away from her wedding. Anyway, so yeah, so, and then, yeah, so that was sort of so it was definitely planned. Like, we went, okay, we had had a few hiccups. My partner, my husband, he had actually broken his back. So we had to put that aside for a little while until he healed, which he did. And yeah, so we got pregnant, and then my pregnancy was just kind of, kind of underwhelming, as in the sense of, like, some people really, 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 really struggle, and then some people, you know, I just keep picturing, like, you know, someone in, like, a meadow going, this is the most beautiful thing ever. And I was like, who are you people? I don't understand. And it wasn't bad. But yeah, and then, so, like, my birth, we were a couple days, well, I'll use air quotes, there's air quotes here, late, because it's an estimated due date, but, you know, we were, and what was interesting was my husband was, at the time, was going to go actually visit his dad with his older son, and I kind of went, you know what, maybe it's not a really good time, and lo, that Saturday, I went into labor, and it was actually, so, we had our midwife, so we went back to the same midwife collective that we were at before, and we were hoping there was a birth center to be open, and it was supposed to be open, and then it wasn't open, and because, like, they were missing, like, security doors or something, they're like, we're ready, but we're just can't open yet, and so we had planned then to go to the hospital. But it was winter time. And so I was like, you know what, let's just have some stuff here just in case. And it turned out that, like, a month earlier, there was that huge ice storm in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And yes. Then, and so that was kind of my going, like, oh shoot, we better just in case things go awry. And then my son's dad remembers it being really, really stormy. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. But if that makes you feel more comfortable, because we ended up just staying at home. The midwives came, and I was just so far along in my labor that my midwives kind of pulled him aside and said, if you both feel comfortable, it's probably better to stay here. Nothing is going wrong. And what was interesting was my sister was on her way because she was going to bring... We had this plan where we were going to bring his mom and his son. They were going to come to the apartment and then hang out, and then we would come home from the hospital. Well, we didn't end up leaving, so I had my sister And I had, and his mom and his son, who was 16 at the time, and we have a really small one bedroom apartment. And so like, and then actually my mom was there as well. And she kind of was a doula'd me alongside my husband. And because I just knew she was the kind of person who can remain calm and knows how to calm me down. And so that was really nice. And it just, it turned into about 15 hours of actual labor. But not like active labor, but like, I was like, oh geez, these contractions are really close. And so I sort of, I tried to have a nap during the day. It was early in the morning. It was like 5:30 in the morning or something like that. When that happened. And so I was like, nope, go back to sleep if you can. Yeah. And everything just kind of progressed as normal. And it was kind of terrifying. And yeah, so my mom was there and my husband, so my mom was at my side and my husband, but they were both at my side at one point, and then it was time to push. And so he actually caught our son. And
that's amazing.
Yeah. And he, yeah. So, and he was like, I didn't know it would be so slippery. And I'm like, but okay, that's fine. So, but he was like, he wasn't prepared, and he was kind of, I'm imagining him like juggling the baby. I wasn't paying attention. And then I actually, what's interesting, I actually had to ask if he was a boy or a girl, because they just put him on my chest. And what was quite amazing was being at home. So we had actually prepped the bed with like a plastic sheet. So we had sheets and then a plastic sheet and then sheets on top. And so I went into the bathroom afterwards, and then the other midwife. So there was two midwives and then a student midwife, and they stripped the bed. And then I, all I had to do was get into bed and like cuddle the baby.
Oh, it was so nice.
Yeah. So that's, yes. And so nothing really went wrong. They were a little bit concerned about his breathing at first, but that was, that resolved itself on its own. And yeah, it was kind of a pretty ideal situation. It was pretty great.
That's really great. Oh yeah. I think you have one of my favorite like birth stories of my friends that I know. Like mine was, I mean, you know my story. My son was 2 weeks late. He was 15 days late, and we ended up having an emergency C-section. And you know, what you experienced was like my pie in the sky, like what I really wanted. But I really should have accepted that the birth my mother had had with me was most likely the one my child and I were going to experience, which was ultimately what ended up happening. And you know, those experiences are so varied. So I know that now, 9 years later, you now work as a doula. So, you know, is this something that becoming a parent, open, like giving birth and going through these experiences with your miscarriage?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I know that can be, it's very vulnerable.
It is, yeah.
So just wondering, pushed you.
You were like, yeah, you were so informed and you like were able to give me all this information. I was part of a private Facebook group with people who were giving birth around the same time throughout Canada. And so we were all due late December, January. We called ourselves a newborn, the New Year's babies, because we were all due in January. And so what would happen was people would ask these questions with panic, and I would be like, okay, but all we need to do is like look at this and ask the question and look at it critically, and here's the situation and here you go, here's your information. And I realized how much I wanted to help people who were like, they were scared. And then that's what brought me to, I was like, well, what can I do, how can I help people who are pregnant, who are giving birth, who are becoming parents? And so I was looking at doula, and then I gave birth and went, oh gosh, no, I can't do that. I couldn't be a birth doula because it was too intense for me, and I think I'm somewhat of an empath, and it actually was going to be too much emotion. for me to be a birth doula, but then I found out that there's a thing called a postpartum doula, and so that's what I ended up doing and becoming, and sort of going into people's homes and helping people out. And then I'm sort of have switched over even now, and not going to people's homes, but teaching classes and doing workshops and that kind of thing, because I'm more interested in the information, giving information side. Because again, I found that being sort of an empath, I would come home with like all of their feelings, yeah, and not knowing how to, like, I couldn't just ignore that, and I didn't want to put up barriers because I feel like that would hold them back from being truthful to me. And so I actually have slowed down with my in-person stuff and or in-home, so going to their home, because what a postpartum doula would do is, after their baby is born, depending on if they had a birth doula, sometimes birth doulas will come a couple of days later, but I would come and I would show them how to care for the baby, because what I found is so many people, I would say 90% of my clients had never held a baby before, had never even been near a baby before, had never seen someone breastfeed before, and if that was their choice, they were like, but I don't even know what to do because I've never even seen anyone do it before. And regardless of the, you know, even bottle feeding, like, yeah, we see it in movies, but like, if you've never been around babies, of course it's terrifying.
Yeah.
So that's what I sort of, my focus is now is to sort of be a perinatal educator and sort of try and get people to become at ease with that they're doing the right thing, because I do believe that there is a certain amount of intuition that we just have to follow
and trust. Yeah.
And trust. And I, obviously there are situations where it just, you know, certain things aren't just not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
But also following our intuition that no, this isn't working, we need to do something else as well. So it's not like, I'm not saying, like, you know, for breastfeeding, for example, I know it's such a hot button topic, but to intuitively know that, yes, this is what our bodies are made for, but also intuitively know that if there is something wrong, there is something wrong and it's not working.
And there's alternatives and there's support.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So following, because I know a lot of people will go, well, you know, my lactation consultant said everyone can breastfeed and therefore there's something wrong with me. It's like, no, follow your intuition. If it's not working, then it's not working.
Yeah. And I remember you taught me, you really reinforced, because I did have some struggles, and you just really reinforced that, like, that is best, Stephanie. That is best. It doesn't matter where it comes from.
Yeah.
That is best. And we ended up getting there. I was just so huge. Like, anyway, that's a different story.
Yeah.
But,
we can do another session.
Yeah. Well, I really, for episode 2, we're going to talk about, our journeys, making mothers. And I think that your perspective in that episode will, be, I think, somewhat enlightening, because you have this picture into what is actually occurring to women.
Mm-hmm.
And for someone like me, who has kind of those fractured intergenerational, like, relationships, I don't know what to call them, but, you know, I didn't have those exposures, and I didn't necessarily have those nurturing environments to, you know, I didn't have someone to, like, I came home from the hospital and was just holding my baby, and I stood there and cried because I literally didn't know what to do now. I just stood there. I was like, I don't know what to do. And my son's father said, go to bed, like, go upstairs and go to bed. And I even, like, put the baby down and laid down, and I'm like, but I'm not tired. And this literally didn't know what to do with myself. I just want to thank you for being here for this episode and being honest and open about your journey. I think it's really important for us to share all the different ways that women decide to get pregnant, and how that evolves for them, and whether they end up raising children or not. So thank you so much for your time today and sharing your story.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If you're interested in joining the monthly Ode Bitch Boast Gathering, you can find event listings and tickets, which are free, on Eventbrite, as well as on the Town Ritual Facebook page. Search Town Rituals online. If you'd like to participate in a future podcast, please send me an email at townrituals@gmail.com, noting podcast in the subject line. I'm so glad you're here.
Cool. Love you all. Thank you.
Love you.
As bye. Grandma said, love you and leave you.
Wonderful.
That's hilarious.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.